if some of the processes were created and being protected by analog teams or leaders, etc., that's when there are usually clashes. I think there is a big job probably to do bridging the gap really between analog and digital generations, I would say.
Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, the creative effectiveness ad tech platform. And this is a weekly podcast about the future of data-driven marketing. And I'm in kind of weird rented space in Amsterdam with Natalia Horvat, who is head of customer marketing and omnichannel development global reserve at Diageo. So Natalia, my wife is Hungarian and I did an awful pronunciation of your surname. But for anyone who doesn't know who you are and what you do, could you give the audience a bit of background?
Sure, no, and thanks, Tom. You did brilliantly, by the way. So yes, I'm Natalia Horvat, and up until recently, I led omnichannel customer marketing at Diageo for Global Reserve, and currently, I'm preparing for a short sabbatical to spend quality time with my family and focus on my personal health and well-being before I dive into my next chapter. So yeah, basically I'm having a bit of break after almost 14 years behind the wheel.
So in that 14 years, you must have given some advice to people trying to maybe follow in your footsteps to a degree. What advice do you find yourself giving to students who are trying to break into the industry?
I love this question. I often mentor young women, and they always ask me about like a secret sauce of success, which is a great question, but there is no one-size-fits-all answer. So I usually say that there is some guardrails what we can still use, right? So there is a simple framework which I usually advise, which I call the three C's, and it's curiosity, clarity, and confidence. Now, what does it mean in practice? I always recommend that in early years of your career, embrace curiosity. I mean, you should always embrace curiosity. I can argue with that, but I think especially in the early years of career, it's very important that you can just question freely anything. There is absolutely no wrong question. And then as soon as you get curious, you also can start to connect the dots along the progress, and that's where you get to clarity. So for example, for me, it took almost 7 years of curiosity on getting to the niche field which I selected for myself as my field. And that's where the focus, basically the clarity started to die focus. So then I started to get more confident about a specific topic. And that's why I think especially for women, confidence is something that we almost like biologically struggle with, right? So that's something that you can only practice as soon as you get very confident as soon as you get very clear in a specific niche and you practice it more and more. So you get essentially your confidence. So there is of course luck and the timing, but this is the three things that I usually say.
I like it. It's like a career funnel, piling loads of curiosity at the top. Then you will gradually filter all that curiosity down to clarity and then go deeper and deeper into that niche and arrive at confidence. That's a really simple and lovely model, actually. So that's great career advice. But what is your one bit of data-driven advice? What is your kind of top tip, your silver bullet that you find yourself sharing?
Well, there is no magical pill, of course, but what I'm usually saying that there are a few areas what we can talk about, and I will break it into three, this one magical or non-existing magical pill, if you will. I think it starts with understanding human biology, because what we forget, especially in our really data-driven world, that we are still talking to humans, right? So that's something that I find fascinating, and I think it's really important to understand in these modern days. The second thing is about being culturally unbiased. And as you mentioned, yeah, I'm originally Hungarian, but having a very international family, even on myself, I see that sometimes you just, you know, you have your culture, right? Which can sometimes really bias you, and that's wrong. that's really wrong. You need to fight that, and you need to be culturally unbiased to be able to really understand and give, if you will, the right inputs if you want to receive the successful outputs. And then last but not least, staying technologically advanced. I find that that's one of the probably the most critical part of our modern days marketers, that we sometimes just get too distant and just, you know, look at the shiny new objects, but don't really go into the deep details of technology and what drives those specific tools. So this is how I would probably break it down into maybe three small pieces.
So we're now going to come on to your shiny new object, which is channel-less marketing strategies. So I'm quite confident I know what that means, but can you just give us an overview of what channel-less marketing strategies are and why they are your shiny new object?
Right. I guess there are a lot of definitions what you can just find around the world around channel-less marketing. It became quite a buzzword. But what I think is the simplest way to define it is that how brands interact with people, or how people also interact with brands. And I usually like to describe it, it's more like, it's not one thing, it's actually an evolution. So it's an evolution of channel transformation. And in the past, we were talking about brand content delivered through, for example, one single channel, take the radio or TV. So it was very single-minded. That's why it's a single channel. Then it evolved into, through the years, multi-channel. Multi-channel strategies were really about the rise of internet, and social media started to obviously drive it to, I would say, most of the blue chip companies' current strategies. But when things evolved, and of course, in the recent years, digital native generations, millennials, reaching Gen Z became increasingly more important for brands. For reaching these generations, had to switch strategy, and this is how omnichannel then evolved from multi-channel, which is basically about just matching that consumer demand up seamlessly interacting across various channels. And looking ahead, this is where the channel-less part comes in, right? Because with the rise of AI and tools, what we see now emerging for brands to deliver hyper personalization, this is where we can really meet the digital native audiences' needs. And this is where we are arriving to this sort of, for now, final stage of channel transformation, which I call channel-less marketing. So yeah, I'm passionate about it because it requires really understanding the human experience, biology, really geography, and really technology to grasp the constant evolution of how people interact with brands.
So could you give me a specific example of a channel-less marketing strategy, or how someone might approach it?
Yeah, so when thinking about a specific example, probably the best way to say that now there are lot of experiments around that, but you cannot really take one big example that, okay, this is how you do channel-less marketing. Why? Because it's all about hyper-personalization, right? It's all about that how you really reach almost like with a completely tailored message specific people, right? So there is no one-size-fits-all solution. And that's why there is no one-size-fits-all example, for channel-less marketing. Mainly, and this is where it comes that we need to understand technology for that, also because the technological advantages are still not there. So technology is evolving to that. And where we get really excited about ChatGPT and DALL-E and Midjourney and all the exciting tools, you still don't have the internal processes, for example, and those technologies within the within corporations, which can actually make it really happen. So that's why it's, for now, I would say there are great experiments happening around that. But definitely you cannot say that, okay, this is the, like, almost like the poster child of channel-less marketing.
Could you give me an example of one of those experiments? Because I love the way that you've talked about how we've arrived at channel-less marketing, but someone may not have your experience, and I want to help them understand, like, how would you go about it? How would you recognize if you saw one of those experiments? Could you talk to a brand that is doing something like this, or just help me make it a little bit more concrete for the listener?
Of course. So let's say that, let's make it really practical, right? You have a, for example, you have a specific city which you want to target, right? So almost like you're starting with a specific city, with a specific niche audience who you want to target with your brand. And I'm not going to say any specific brand just for the sake of simplicity. What you want to do there is to really understand first that audience. So you collect that data, and this is where it comes in the point of collecting clean data, which is organized. And then you use that data to actually measure that where you are going to reach that audience. Who are them? Almost like profiling the specific audience who are you going to target based on their interests, right? And this is, for example, what TikTok does perfectly, that they are really perfected the interest-based profiling, and they basically build their algorithms on that. So as soon as you also as a brand really understand how to, who's your audience and then what you want to deliver to them, then you can use, for example, these platforms to deliver that message to them. And then the what comes in, because what are you going to show to them? This is where content is really critical. So you create content with automation, so using this automated creative tools, which you can think about image generation for that specific audience based on. It can be delivered through different languages to really specific interests, essentially still delivering on your brand value. So this is how I would explain it almost in the practical terms, that research your audience, find those specific interest touch points, and then create based on that the hyper-personalized content, deliver it through these specific channels.
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Manfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. So how does that make it channel-less? Because that's a media setup, right? So we're targeting people in Rotterdam who like expensive clothes, for argument's sake. That's a weird example. And we know they're on TikTok, right? So that's a media planning job, right? And then you use some automation, Gen AI, to produce a variety of different assets and ads to suit the niches within that niche. But that feels like a channel strategy to me. So how does that expand into being channel-less?
I go back to the content here, right? Because usually how we, and you are right, absolutely, Tom, on that normally, yeah, this is how you do a channel strategy. If it would be like, okay, so this is for social media, for example, then that's a channel strategy. The thing is that's why you need to go back to really your understanding of your target group, because that means that you are not only going to produce that content, for example, for social media, but the same core of the content, then you can create, for example, pop-ups in that specific areas, then you link it to your social media accounts as well, or you can link it to your sites, to e-commerce, etc., right? So this is where it comes the experience, because it's not about the brand, right? It really is about what people see from it. It really is about what people experience. And this is why I was talking about biology quite a lot, that as soon as you really understand your target, your biology, what really drives them, what are their needs, you will be also able to point out which are those specific touch points where you need to interact, right? And then we are not talking about channels anymore. We are talking about touch points. And the hyper-personalization is actually coming on top of the touch points, and then we can even talk about platformless content, etc. So basically whatever experience is that target group getting, that specific persona getting, right? That's what's important, and not the channel.
That's a lovely explanation. So by understanding people biologically, understanding the touch points that they have with the brand and the consumption moment, talk about alcohol, for example, and then you would create personalized content to suit those touch points. And then I love that phrase, your platformless content, right? So you have a kind of central way of making, or a central asset bank, or a central generative solution to produce platformless content that gets served up at certain touch points based on the people and their needs, as opposed to like, right, we're doing a TikTok thing. That's unbelievably advanced in my experience in the thinking. So it's exciting to have this conversation with you. So what are the barriers here? Why aren't people just doing platformless content?
This is the technology part, as you can guess, coming in, right? Coming from big corporations, right? So that's where I spent most of my career. I think there is also, you know, like what you can see that brands and companies are at different stages, right? So you can see that with some of the, especially smaller brands where you have more room for experimentation, that's where you can actually also try out new technologies, for example, to really try to deliver on specific campaigns, specific projects, to just test out this. But for big brands, big campaigns, where you really have that you really have already a channel strategy for a long time, you cannot just change it like that, right? So you would need to change the whole underlying technology, but the whole corporation essentially, right? So it goes a lot to IT as well in that sense. And this is, I think, where in corporations we see a lot, marketing, IT now, who has the ball, right, in delivering that content, because of course the data then sits somewhere in the data center, then okay, who can access it until it gets to marketing, almost like that specific moment is gone, right? So how you can really interact with the consumers at the moment of choice, right? That would be that it's seamless also within the organization. So to answer a bit maybe better the question, the biggest bottleneck essentially is technology within the organizations. We are getting there, but I think it will still take a little bit of time to roll it out across the different brands.
So I'll push you on that. In my experience, it's not technology that's the problem. It usually does what it's set out to do. It's the people operating that technology, and you know, automated creative is its own innovation, its own business. And we're quite often very, very far ahead of what the people in the organizations are capable of. So we can be right. We can have the right technology. We can have all the proof points, we can have all the integrations, it's all set up ready to go. But unless you have the people with the ambition to innovate, the ambition to be curious and to learn, it will fall over. So how do you feel about that? Like, obviously the tech has to work and the tech might not be quite there, but how do you make sure you got the right kind of people to deliver the tech when it is there?
Love this challenge, actually. I love this challenge, Tom, because I agree with you that it's not only technology. Why I was talking mostly about technology, because that's what you would find almost like a common ground, right? And then it comes, of course, the people who operate that technology. But I would also argue on that it's the people. I think it's also the processes, because if you take individual people, you find out, and that's what, for example, in my experience in the past 13, 14 years, what I see is that people individually, they are really curious and eager to learn new things and so on. But whenever it comes to processes, and especially, talking about analog generations and digital generations, that's where you can also start to see that sometimes it really is like, if some of the processes were created and being protected by analog teams or leaders, etc., that's when there are usually clashes with maybe a bit more digitally advanced Gen Z team members and teams, mostly because then the conversation around processes becomes really, really challenging, right? Because your belief fundamentally is different from one team or another. So I think there is a big job probably to do bridging the gap really between analog and digital generations, I would say.
Analog and digital generations is the most polite way of talking about it. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up now because we are actually getting kicked out of this office. Thank you so much. If someone wants to get in touch with you about any of this stuff, where's the best place to do that? And what makes a message that you will respond to?
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Tom. It was really a pleasure. And I would love to, like you say, I love to talk about this topic. So I would be really happy to get in touch with people on LinkedIn. So just find me on LinkedIn, Natalia Horvat. And you also can find me in some of the industry conferences. It will be in a month in Amsterdam on a customer loyalty conference presenting. And in a few months in London as well. So on a programmatic event as a presenter. So really excited to meet either online or in person.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.